You are listening to the Small Screen Podcast, part of the Invasion Radio Podcast Network. For pop culture and movie chat, check out the Popcast Podcast. And for insight on the hottest music, listen to the speaker box below. You can find all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at screeninvasion.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Small Screen Podcast, episode 43. I'm Crystal Bailey, co-host here, along with Marcos.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcos Canales. You can read my blog, smallscreenhappenings.com, and I also contribute recaps to both thetelevixen.com and screeninvasion.com.
And there was kind of a lot of news this past week, so let's just dig right in. The first one is something we've talked about a lot. In general, like, these shows get canceled, and of course there's always a petition or something to, like, oh, make a movie, or oh, somebody, you know, pick it up and save our show. So the latest one is The Killing. AMC canceled it after its second season, and now Netflix may be bringing it back for a third season on that platform. What are your thoughts on this development?
I mean, like you'd mentioned, this is something that is not by any means new. A lot of canceled shows are always in the running for either a Netflix or Amazon or DirecTV to resuscitate them, you know, like a Friday Night Lights or Damages. So there's been a track record of things like this going on. So that's why stories like this always have some legs to it, because we have seen it before. You know, but that said, The Killing was one of those shows that I never quite took seriously as the contender, because it had so much backlash after that first season that, you know, when these news stories started to leak out, I was like, yeah, okay, I can see how this could excite the fan base, but I didn't think there's enough viewers out there for it to be viable. But then I did hear that season two improved a little bit, so I guess that kind of fanned the flames for a potential third season. I wasn't surprised when AMC cut ties. In the end, though, I'm happy for the fans of the Killing. I don't know how many are out there. And I will say that a potential third season, especially hearing that season two was somewhat better, you know, that could entice me enough to catch up on Netflix. So I'm more interested in the behind-the-scenes situation and the wheelings and dealings that are going on to keep this going, as opposed to actually being excited about the show coming back for a third season. So,
yeah, no, I definitely agree. I didn't really watch the show. I was kind of interested, but then, like you said, the backlash after the season one finale kind of squashed all of that for me. But what I do think is interesting is that this deal sounds like it's not just going to be on Netflix, where this deal would have it run kind of like in tandem, like it would still air on AMC and it would also be available for streaming on Netflix, or maybe maybe it'll be on Netflix first and then AMC, or vice versa. So I think that's kind of interesting, because it kind of reminds me of the Friday Night Lights DirecTV deal that worked out, where they kind of both had it and they both aired it. And that, you know, obviously worked for Friday Night Lights, which is a quality show that deserved all of its seasons and was phenomenal. And so if this is something that works, maybe it's something that can work for other shows, you know, as they kind of become too expensive or not enough viewers for one network alone to sustain them.
Yeah, and there have been some rumblings that this might have been a move that AMC had to do because Hell on Wheels, which was renewed for a third season, there's some drama there with showrunners leaving, and the fate of that show is not quite as solid as what it had been a few months ago. So this very well may be AMC realizing that there's a chance that Hell on Wheels might not be coming back. So they needed something to put on the air, and maybe they decided that The Killing was just barely on the chopping block, so they decided to bring it back, especially with the help of Netflix. So, again, like I said, the everything that's going on behind the curtains, I think for me as a fan of television, is way more interesting than the actual show. So I'm hoping that more detail comes out about the motivations behind this. But like I mentioned before, I mean, every show has its fans, so I'm not going to begrudge the Killing fans for them potentially getting a third season. And like I said, it might be enough to get me back on board. But there's at least 10 other shows I'd rather see Netflix get in bed with than The Killing. So we'll see. There's always a chance it may never happen, but it's starting to pick up steam, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's finalized in the next couple of weeks.
It's exciting times. The next bit of news is definitely more in your wheelhouse, because I don't watch Ben and Kate, but they just announced that it's going to be getting some new showrunners. So what are your thoughts on that and how it could affect the show?
Yeah, honestly, I freaked out a little bit when I read this news, because the two showrunners who started off with the show were Garrett Donovan and Neil Goldman, and they have a pretty decent pedigree. They were part of the Community showrunning team and producing team. They had ties to Scrubs back in the day. So those are two shows that I obviously really do enjoy. And so it didn't surprise me that they were attached to a show like Ben and Kate, and why I tend to gravitate to that particular program. And I think I read a few weeks ago that they'd actually exited prior to this news breaking, so they were in the market for new showrunners anyway. I wasn't necessarily surprised that there were new names tapped. The people who they hired, though, that's where it kind of gave me some pause, because apparently, their names are John Quintance and David Feeney, and their body of work isn't as encouraging. I believe they've been tied to Whitney, Perfect Couples, Two Broke Girls, Love Bites, all shows that either I gave up on or never watched. So that's where I was kind of skittish, because their history wasn't as in my wheelhouse as Donovan and Goldman's. That said, I mean, it's still going to be Dana Fox's show, so I'm sure she's still going to be doing the day-to-day stuff in terms of the creative process, like heading up the writer's room and things like that. And maybe these guys are just going to be doing the nitty-gritty, not-so-fun stuff like production scheduling and budgets and stuff of that nature. So as long as Dana Fox is still the voice of the show, I think I'm okay with the change. But I'll be honest, I mean, I wasn't thrilled to see this news, because it's already a show that's not doing so well in the ratings, and it seemed like this was a change that was made in order to make it a broader comedy, which I don't think would necessarily do anybody any good. I just don't want the show to stop being what it is. And when you have someone who has ties to Whitney and Two Broke Girls, you know, that's where I was, you know, freaking out just a little bit. I have faith in Dana Fox, though, so as long as she's the creative voice behind the show, then I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't watch the show, but hearing that the new showrunner's credits is not, you know, giving me a lot of confidence in ever checking it out, just to be honest. Not a big fan of Whitney.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
That said, though, I want to say Dana Fox had ties to New Girl. So there is that.
All right. I do love New Girl, so there's hope there, I guess. One day maybe I'll check it out. I mean, it's on, like, right after everything. Like, it's on Tuesday nights, like, big comedy night.
I mean, I will say that its placement on Tuesday nights is a little suspect, because it is behind Raising Hope, which we all know is critically loved but not watched by a ton of people. And it's going up against the Voice results shows and which the Dancing People on ABC.
Dancing People.
So it's not in the best time slot. I mean, honestly, I wish it would have gotten Mindy's spot, but we all knew that was never going to happen. I will say that it does take a little bit of time to get used to, especially for those who were initially put off by Nat Faxon's character, Ben, who is very much the the crazy schlubby guy, but there is a serious heart to it that I think people who gravitate towards some of those moments in A New Girl or a Go On or shows of that ilk might appreciate it. So,
All right. So this next bit of news, I'm devastated about. So, so MTV's dancing show, America's Best Dance Crew, has been canceled after 7 seasons. I loved this show because I love, you know, So You Think You Can Dance, and I love America's Best Dance Crew because it takes these people who are just phenomenal dancers and just and highlights them and allows that art form to come into, you know, everybody's home, as compared to Dancing with the Stars, where they are not all talented dancers. They are just celebrities who want to try dancing, partnered with the pro, but, you know, they dance down to their level of the celebrity. But so I'm super bummed about it. Did you watch America's Best Dance Crew at all?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a few times, and I started off watching it, I would say the first 2 seasons, I was pretty invested in. For some reason, it just fell off my radar. I think a lot of that had to do with MTV's scheduling of it, because they would never have a set time frame for it. It would either sometimes be in the summer, sometimes it was going to be in the winter. I don't know if they ever tried it in the fall, but it felt like it was in some ways scheduling putty for MTV. They would just put it on whenever they needed it to be on, as opposed to establishing it as appointment television, like, say, an American Idol or one of...
Dance.
Yeah, exactly, So You Think You Can Dance, where you know, for the most part, summer is always going to be when So You Think You Can Dance is going to be on. I mean, they tried the fall thing, and it didn't quite work. I think summer's where it belongs. Similarly, you always know starting in January, you're going to get American Idol. And to be fair, even though America's Best Dance Crew is an entertaining show, it's not up to that level. So I can understand why it would never get that kind of treatment. But yeah, moving it around so many times and not always knowing exactly when it was going to be on. And even within that dynamic, it would either sometimes be on a Sunday and then on a Wednesday and then on these random days. So it just wasn't, you know, it didn't have that stability to I think, really grow an audience. But those who really were fans of it, like yourself, tended to really, really love it. So I'm a little upset for those people who have spent so many years watching it, and now all of a sudden it's no longer going to be there. Obviously, you're a much bigger fan than I am, so, I mean, you're obviously devastated, but what are your thoughts on this news in terms of what led to it potentially?
You know, well, like you said, it never really had the stability of, like, knowing it was a mid-season show or a summer show. It just, it, like you said, it kind of just filled holes. They, like, because of that, you can't really make it appointment television, you know, like, oh, man, it's every March, this show's coming back. Like you said, it started, I think, one season in January, one season in June, one season in, like, August. Like, it was very up in the air. And I'm not sure if that was, you know, technically MTV saying, like, oh, we'll just put it here, or if it had more to do with some of the, like, behind-the-scenes issues, like, coming up with the third judge, which changed a lot throughout the 7 seasons, because originally it was, I can't remember his name, Shane Sparks. And he, you know, had done work on So You Think You Can Dance, and he was a great choreographer, and he was by far, like, the best judge of the 3, because it was JC, Lil Mama, and Shane Sparks. And he obviously, you know, as a choreographer, had the most experience with dance. And then he left the show. I can't remember if he left the show because of some scandal that he was involved in, or if that scandal happened, like, afterwards. But either way, he left the show, and that third judge, like, seat never really got replaced to that same level. Like, one season it was Omarion. I think one season it was rotating, like, guest judges. And then they got Dietrix from Quest, who was also on So You Think You Can Dance. And he did it for the last couple seasons, but he was a B-boy, so he didn't really do choreography either. At least he wasn't like trained in that. He, you know, was trained in tricks and flares and, like turns and all of that stuff. Not in, you know, hip hop dance moves. So, you know, he was a good judge, but just not up to the level of what a choreographer could have been. And I think that, ultimately hurt the show to have, you know, three judges that, you know, they're not to the same level as, like, The Voice judges or American Idol judges or So You Think You Can Dance judges. You know, there just wasn't as much credibility there, which I think prevented people from, new fans from coming in. But at the same time, like, the big draw is always going to be the dancers, and the dancers were always fantastic. So, I mean, I'm sure if they had found someone of the, like, Simon Cowell or level who in the dance world, like Nigel or somebody who brought entertainment value, but also like credibility and knowledge. I think that could have really helped him. Mm-hmm. But it was still an entertaining show, but those earlier seasons with Shane Sparks where he could provide that constructive criticism and you know, technique to it. Those were definitely the stronger seasons.
You know, and that's kind of interesting to hear because I would say, even though I didn't really watch the latter seasons, for me as a very casual viewer, I thought that Dietrich would have actually brought more credibility to the show because he didn't Quest Crew win?
They did win, but
And you said, he had been on So You Think You Can Dance as an all-star, so he had some, at least, name recognition. Because I'll be honest, I didn't know who Shane Sparks was until I started watching this show. I guess you already had JC there for that component, but in terms of just the dancing that was put on display on ABDC, you know, I always thought that Dietrich would have been a natural fit for that judging role. That doesn't necessarily mean he's a good judge, though. I mean, just because he can dance, like you said, if he's not well-rounded in terms of different styles or knowing the mechanics or the precision points to a routine, then I can see how that might not necessarily work in that context. But then again, I never really watched ABDC for proficient dancing. Like, that's what So You Think You Can Dance for. Ballet is a very different form than hip hop or crunk or anything else. And so I think where you have a showcase just for that type of dancing, having a b-boy would make more sense to me. But then again, like you kind of alluded to, if he just wasn't a good judge, then I can see him bringing down the show.
You know, you're like, he did bring that name recognition, and he was, like, excited and, like, had good charisma. But, like, for any reality show that hinges on popular votes, like, you do kind of listen to the judges when deciding. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like with Dietrich, you know, he was excited about all of the performers. So it's not like he was really judging as much as previous judges actually. So, you know, like when you're listening to them trying to like hear what they did wrong or like which crew you should vote for or whatever, or should advance, he didn't really bring that to the table. He was just like, oh man, you blew my mind. Like every performance. It's not like going to make the show terrible. Cause again, like I said, the dancers are really the main attraction. But it does, you know, bring it down a little when you feel like, say, one crew gets voted in over the one that was technically better but got more votes because that one blew his mind as compared to was really great.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I mean, like, even, like, the later seasons, all of it, it was a great show and, like, it was exciting to watch. And, like, a lot of talent has come out of that with Quest and Jabberwockies. Super Crew, like, there are some great dancers. So I'm sad to see it go.
Oh, tissue.
But yeah, so that, I mean, that was, I was surprised because it didn't seem like, it also didn't seem like a show that was like at risk.
Yeah, it was kind of out of nowhere. But then again, kind of like with The Killing, I wonder what was going on behind the scenes that led to this decision, because, I mean, I don't know how involved Randy Jackson was in the day-to-day stuff. I mean, obviously he was able to do both that and American Idol. But then when you have Mario Lopez going on X Factor now, I don't know if that also had something to do with it, because maybe he felt he was better than ABDC now, or maybe he wasn't able to do both. Again, it was so out of nowhere that I want to know what the motivation for the cancellation was, because, I mean, you can always look at ratings, but ratings are it's such a foreign concept when it comes to cable, especially these kind of shows, that I don't know if you can point to ratings and say that's why it wasn't renewed or that's why it was canceled. Part of me thinks it was more, it had more to do with whatever was going on behind the scenes versus just the tangible stuff that we know. So,
yeah, no, I totally agree, especially with the Mario Lopez news. I forgot that he was going to be on that show. So, I mean, it does make sense that, you know, if he couldn't do it because of timing, they might not want to continue, because, you know, he is a big part of the show. He's the host, but, you know, like, some hosts you feel like can be replaced. I mean, I don't know if he could be replaced as easily, so.
Okay.
But so in other news, happier news, Wilfred, the show on FX with Elijah Wood, has been renewed for a third season. I watched the show. I think it's kind of genius in it's how it looks at their friendship and like life and everything. And Elijah Wood is hilarious in it. So I'm really glad it's going to be coming back. Do you watch the show at all?
I caught up on season one on Hulu, I think, is how I did that. And it never really clicked with me. I think I watched the season two premiere and was out at that point. Not because it wasn't doing anything new or innovative. I think that it should definitely get recognition for being cutting edge. It just wasn't my kind of show. I'm not opposed to very dark humor. But I would rarely laugh at Wilford, which, you know, maybe it's not going for that, and that's totally understandable. But for me at least, just being different and just being dark and those types of things that sometimes the FX comedies try to do isn't enough for me, because at the end of the day, I still want to at least be entertained and amused. And I'll be honest, I want to laugh at a 30-minute comedy. And since the FX comedies don't always go for those kinds of reactions, they just tend to fall to the wayside for me. You know, maybe that makes me, you know, a bad person, whatever. I'm not getting what I'm looking for from a show like Wilfred. You know, much like with The Killing, though, I'm not going to begrudge the fans for getting a third season, because there are people out there who really enjoy that show and appreciate it way more than I ever could. So good on them for getting a third season. I'm just probably not going to be tuning in to watch it. So.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. Like you said, it is a very dark comedy. So it's definitely not for everyone. But yeah, I'm glad it'll be back and to see where they take it from. Where it ended in season two.
How do you feel season two went? I mean, I guess not going into tons of details, but do you feel like it's something that I should catch up on? Was there enough there to warrant a second look?
I mean, if you didn't like season one, I feel like season two would just turn you off even more, because it gets darker and a little bit more depressing into Ryan's head and his friendship relationships. So if you didn't like season one, then I really don't think you're going to like season two, just because it just goes even deeper into that world with him and kind of takes it in a different direction as well with his relationship. He gets a girlfriend in season two who's played by Allison Mack from Smallville, who I loved in Smallville, like season one when I used to watch it. And she is this great, like, foil counterpoint to Ryan and his problems, because she's got a whole bag of her own problems. So, if you didn't like season one, don't bother.
Okay. No, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. It's good to know.
And then in other news, there were a bunch of full season orders from the networks. So just really quickly, going to list off the big ones. So Chicago Fire gets a full season. CW's Beauty and the Beast gets a full season. And Nashville gets a full season. We've talked about Nashville a bit before on the show. Are you planning to stick it out for the whole season, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll probably be keeping up with it, mostly out of loyalty to Connie Britton, I would say at this point. It still really hasn't, to me at least, reached its full potential. I still think that there are elements to it that drag it down, especially like this last episode, which focused a lot more on Raina's husband and his political aspirations and everything that was going on before we met him. All that stuff I don't care about one bit at all. So that automatically takes me out every time that storyline is brought up. You know, but like I've said before, when it focuses on the music aspect and the creative aspects, that's where I tend to appreciate it a lot more. And so as long as they keep those elements around, which I don't see why they wouldn't, because I think that... I mean, I don't know exactly where they are in terms of the production, but I'd be surprised if the writers really believe that people care about the political mayoral campaign at this point. So I'm hoping that the back nine shifts gears a little bit and maybe focuses more on the stuff that I am actually enjoying and tones down the stuff that just isn't working. And in terms of the other shows, Chicago Fire is a show that I'm still interested by. I've never actually watched it yet, but it's piling up on my Hulu queue, and I mean to get around to watching that show and those episodes, because I've heard that it's an okay show. It's by no means a great show, but it has enough elements that could be entertaining. So I'm happy for NBC that it seems to be doing okay this season. So I wasn't necessarily surprised by Chicago Fire getting a back nine. What about you? When you heard that, were you shocked that the Chicago Fire is doing as well as it has been doing?
Yeah, a little, just because I feel like I haven't heard much about it either way. So, like, you know, I feel like there hasn't been a lot of critical buzz. There hasn't been a lot of, like, ratings galore, news or anything. So, I was a little surprised that the network is confident enough in it to give it a full season, but... Maybe it's a sign I should maybe pay attention and watch it.
Maybe, or maybe it's just because, again, in this ratings environment nowadays, even poor ratings like it might be getting might just be good enough. Who knows?
Yeah.
but yeah, maybe I've been paying attention just a little bit more with this show in particular. And, you know, it's not like I was expecting great drama from it to begin with. So as long as it kind of stays in that middle ground of just having some cool action sequences, some big fires, and some somewhat interesting character drama, that might be enough for me, but we'll see. I'll definitely try to check it out and report back. And I guess the least we say about Beauty and the Beast, the better. That said, I kind of want it to be a big hit just to rub it in everybody's face, because everyone hated this show, and it might be the worst show ever made, but that just makes me want it to do well. So, like, the smart, you know, critics and the experts just have to eat it, because because the show they hated the most is the one that runs for, like, 10 seasons.
That'd be pretty crazy if it lasted 10 seasons.
It'll be crazy if it lasts more than one. But
yeah. But it's a CW, so, I mean...
Yeah, you know...
And it could come back.
Yeah, you never quite know with the CW, but my gut says if a show like The Secret Circle doesn't get a second season, if Life Unexpected struggles like it did, then I seriously doubt the CW will be willing to keep Beauty and the Beast much past that 22 episodes. So.
True. So, yeah, that pretty much wraps up our news for this week. So what have you been watching lately?
Yeah, the show I wanted to talk about first is Castle, and as everyone knows, I'm a fan of the show. But the reason why I wanted to talk about it this week is because the last episode that aired last Monday was its homage and nod to science fiction television shows. This time around, the case revolved around this event organizer who is a big fan of this science fiction show that was canceled after like 9 episodes or something like that. And it was a made up one, but it was very much in the vein of maybe it was Star Trek, but I would say it might look and feel a little bit more similar to like say a Babylon 5, even though I'm not as familiar with that show. Regardless, it was a cult sci-fi show that ended before its time. And so we obviously got some shout outs to Firefly, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, things like that. And Castle really is at its best when it takes this kind of approach to its case of the week, when it does something a little bit nerdy, something that's a little light compared to what you would see on a Bones or a CSI. And it just allows Nathan Fillion to really just do what he does well, which is geek out for the most part. But what I liked about this episode in particular was the fact that it really wasn't a Rick-centric episode. It was a Kate-centric episode. And the twist there was she was a fan of the show that was canceled. And even though she didn't really come out and admit it right off the bat because of its notoriety as being a cheesy, melodramatic type of program, when she finally opened up to Castle about her love for it and why she loved that show, it was just really good stuff from the character and Stanikadic, and I think it really did tap into why these kinds of television programs resonate with certain fans, because it was just at a time in her life where she needed to find herself and really understand who she was, and she latched onto this character on this TV show that helped her through the tough times and kind of helped shape her into the person she is today. So I think if you ask a lot of sci-fi fans, they'll have similar stories of why they love Firefly, why they love Battlestar, why they liked Babylon 5 or Stargate, you name it. And I think that's what I liked most, because it wasn't talking down to the fans and it wasn't making fun of the genre. It really was, in my opinion, a love letter to science fiction television. That's why I really did like this episode.
Yeah, I actually tuned into this one per your recommendation, given the plot. And I really liked it. Like you said, it kind of captured the sci-fi genre, like fan, you know, why she liked Chloe, why she was into this like group and, dressing up as her and everything. I thought that was great. And I loved that it had, I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy who played the captain, you know, he was on Eureka. And so that was kind of like another sci-fi fan tie-in. And I thought it was a great episode, and it was nice with this type of show that I could kind of just come in as somebody who doesn't watch and just, like, enjoy this one episode without having too many questions. I'm like, who's that guy? What's going on? Who's, like, you know, but that is the one plus of these, you know, episodic procedural shows. But what I did want to ask you about, because the whole episode, I was like, they're not together. Are they together? It didn't act like they were together until it got to like the ending where he's talking about how he wishes she would dress up in her thing, in the costume, and like.
And you really can't blame him. I'm just, come on. Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it was interesting that their dynamic as like the writer and the cop, you know, hasn't really changed from when the last time I watched the show when they weren't together. Mm-hmm. So it was still very like. Not professional, because, I mean, Castle doesn't really act professional. He's, you know, that kind of jokey guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting that, like, I couldn't tell the difference until they were really, like, explicit about it.
Yeah.
That, okay, yeah, they're actually together in a relationship. So I thought that was interesting. And, like, so how long have they been together? Like, what's...
Yeah, that's actually a really great point to bring up, because... I can see how that can be somewhat confusing, because, yeah, if you look at their interactions in this episode and a season 2 episode, they're pretty much exactly the same. And I think that's what's good about their relationship is nothing has really changed drastically. And I want to say that they officially, I guess, started dating at the end of season 4. So last season finale is when they hooked up, and so the first couple of episodes of this season dealt with them trying to hide what was going on with them in the relationship from Esposito and Ryan and their boss, because apparently if they get caught, then he can no longer work with the precinct, and so that's why they were trying to do that. And all of that's a little bit contrived because, you know, it's very familiar trappings that we've seen tons of times before. Even though they've been officially a couple for weeks now, I do think the fact that to the untrained eye or the uninitiated wouldn't see too much of a difference, I think that's actually a good nod to what the writers have done, because it shows that putting these two together in a romantic relationship isn't going to change the world. You know, it's not going to make these huge dramatic shifts in the narrative or the tone. He would have said the exact same thing. He would have, you know, teased her about being a fan and asking her to dress up in the costume, even if they weren't together. The only difference now is she's willing to play along with it. So that hopefully kind of gives you an idea of what's been going on with them. And then, you know, for the future, I hope they stick with it, you know, because we can talk Moonlight and Curse all we want, but shows like Castle, Bones, Psych, like we've all said before, these are all good examples of them getting it right and keeping the world that they've created somewhat familiar and sane, and not drastically changing things just for the sake of drama.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you bring up Bones, and like the thing that kind of made it, like, as I was watching Castle, because on Bones they have changed. Like, it's still working as a show, but it was a very distinct shift, because obviously them getting together came with the baby. So it was very obvious, you know, from the get-go that they were together, that they are now a family and a unit, and like, that has changed the dynamic of the show a bit. I mean, it's still obviously a crime show. You know, they have the case of the week, they have the forensic, they have all that stuff, but now there's like a larger portion of the show dedicated to, you know, the baby or their relationship, buying a house, washing machine troubles, you know, like random stuff like that, you know, because they are together now. Whereas like on Castle, obviously it's a much different stage in their relationship. Like, this is the beginning, like you said. But it is a lot, I think, a lot more subtle even compared to the beginnings of like Bones and stuff when they got together.
No, and that's a fair point. And maybe Bones wasn't the greatest example, because I somewhat forgot about the baby, to be very honest with you. but I guess the larger point that I was getting at was just pointing at the fact that putting these two leads together that have been going through years and years of unresolved sexual tension isn't going to break the show. In some ways, it might actually make it better. And so it's just with hopes that other shows that try to do these types of things won't be as gun-shy to put them together and keep them apart for no good reason for 5 years. So
that's fair.
And another show I just quickly wanted to talk about was TBS's The Wedding Band. And the reason why I wanted to talk about it is because it was a show that crept up on me. Like, I think I've seen a few promos for it during Conan, and the premise is exactly what it sounds like. It's a group of guys who are a wedding band, and they play different events on the weekends. And at first, I really wasn't going to be dedicating any time to watching it, but it's on Saturday night. It really didn't conflict with anything else, so I decided to watch it. And I found it fairly likable. It's not the greatest comedy in the world. Some people say it might be considered a dramedy because it's an hour long, but at its core, it's pretty much a sitcom that's just an hour long. But it has Brian Austin Green, it has Harold Perrineau as two of the band members, and I think for the most part, the guys have a good rapport. It's been kind of described as Adam Sandler movie, as a 1 hour TV show, and I kind of see that, but it's not as painful to watch, I guess, as most Adam Sandler movies. I actually kind of liked it, And I'll probably be checking it out for the next couple of weeks. I've really been impressed with TBS's dedication to original programming. Some of its shows, like Men at Work, Sullivan and Son, aren't great either, but it did save Cougar Town, so that alone gets it some high marks, and that together with a show like Wedding Band, I think, gives it, you know, some credibility, and I would like to see TBS grow as an actual cable network on par with, say, like an FX or stations like that. So just wanted to give a quick shout out to Wedding Band.
Cool. Maybe I'll have to check that one out.
Cool.
And then so what I've been watching this week, briefly talked about Bones already, but the episode for Veterans Day I thought was really well done and, like, incredibly timely. Like, obviously the Veterans Day stuff, they can plan on that because, you know, it's a set day every year. And so this year, you know, the episode was dedicated to figuring out this unknown body that turned out to be somebody who saved a few lives in the Pentagon on 9/11. And he was a veteran who had been, like, messed up in his time, like, mentally messed up from his time at war, where he was now, like, a homeless guy, but he saw what happened at the Pentagon and saved some lives, and they were able to match his, like, bones to find out this identity and to give him a proper, you know, respectful burial as a veteran, as a hero, as compared to the anonymous homeless man treatment that he had been given, you know, the 10 years he was a John Doe. So that was all poignant and really well done. And, you know, Bones being a ex-military man too, this really affected him. And I thought the whole episode just kind of nailed the tone of, you know, being about such a serious subject while also, you know, having these characters, you know, lighten it up from time to time and having the squint turns there to keep it from being too depressing and too sad. So I thought that was good. And then another thing that kept it light was that Bones had just read a novel by Phil Jackson. So, of course, being in L.A. and all of the Lakers stuff and all the coach stuff, I was like, how did they know to be this timely? So I was like, it was amazing. So and that provided a lot of humor because she decided to start treating the Squinterns more as a basketball team and working with them in that capacity, like cheering them on. She even did, like, you know, the typical locker room, like, butt slap thing on all of them, which was so inappropriate and hilarious. So I just really quickly wanted to commend Bones on such a heavy episode and handling it so well.
Yeah, when I saw the promos for this episode, it definitely looked like one that I would have appreciated and enjoyed watching. I just have to power through all the other ones in this current season. And I'm sure that it probably would have worked well enough on its own. But I'm the kind of guy who just, I want to watch everything in order for the most part. So that's why
I totally get you. I'm the same way. So just know that when you do finally power through, this is a good one.
Cool. Cool. Good to know.
That's pretty much the only show I want to talk about currently on air that I'm watching. But also this week kind of marks the anniversary of one of, I think, both of our favorite shows. At least it's one of my favorite shows ever.
Definitely.
And that's Firefly. They had the marathon on Science Channel, and they had the anniversary special on as well, which unfortunately I missed because I totally spaced out and didn't record it and didn't even think about it.
Yeah, your favorite show, apparently.
No, I'm such a horrible fan. But luckily, they are going to be re-airing it. So I will for sure be catching one of those reruns. So what we're talking about is, for this week, we just want to talk about our favorite episode of the series. And, you know, there's only 13 episodes, so there's not a whole lot to dig through. What was your favorite episode of the Firefly run?
You know, it's kind of a tough question because, you know, for the most part, every episode was pretty good. I mean, there are a few missteps here and there. Like, I think the Ariel episode never quite worked for me. But when it came to picking my favorite episode of Firefly, it came down to two, and ultimately the one that won out was Out of Gas. And the reason why I like this so much is, honestly, I think this was the first episode of Firefly I ever watched, because I think I've said before on the podcast that I never watched it when it was airing live, and I actually never started to really get into this world until after Serenity. Like, I saw Serenity first, and then I bought the DVDs and watched them later. But I remembered a few years ago, before I even saw Serenity, I think it was when Sci-Fi had picked up the rights to air during a marathon or a weekend or something like that. And I tuned in, and I remember vividly seeing Out of Gas. And out of context, I never quite understood what its appeal was until I watched the entire series. And the reason why Out of Gas is my favorite episode is because it's in some ways the perfect hour of television for me, because it was not only just an origin story, it kind of told the story of how all of these individuals ended up on Serenity, and how Malcolm even came across the ship. But it had a very interesting device that kicked everything off in terms of the ship actually being out of order and them not going to be able, they weren't going to be able to survive on it because of the lack of oxygen. So what they decide to do is Mal has them go off in separate directions and their little space shuttles, and he goes down with the ship, and all of that was very powerful stuff. And as we know, it all works out in the end. But that alone, in combination with getting to see glimpses of all of these characters we've come to love and how they became this family, you add those two elements together, and that's why, in my mind, Out of Gas is probably going to go down not only as one of the best Firefly episodes ever, but I'll say probably one of the best episodes of television ever made. So that's definitely why it was, in the long run, an easy choice for me, even though Heart of Gold was up there too. But the thing about Out of Gas, every time I watch it, whether it be a rerun on Science Channel or when I'm doing a marathon on my own, it never ceases to amaze me, and it always makes me cry every single time. Even though I know exactly what's going to happen, it always gets me.
No, it is such a great episode, and that was definitely in contention for my favorite episode as well. Just because mainly I'm such a huge sucker for both origin stories and non-linear storytelling, which this combines into one. And it is, like you said, so powerful to see Mal going down with his ship and how everything plays out. It's just such a strong episode of television in general.
What about you? What was your favorite Firefly episode?
Yeah, so this was kind of hard because, like I said, Out of Gas was definitely up there. Heart of Gold was up there. But the one I ended up picking is a little lighter. And I think Janestown has to be my favorite episode. The song alone.
Exactly.
The Hero of Canton. I still, I listen to that song. Just, sometimes when I'm like, man, you know what was good? This. And, play it. Because it was so great. Such a great moment. And, everybody's reaction as that song is happening is so funny and in character. And, Simon's face and Wash's reaction, it was just, spot on hilarious. And, the whole episode is so funny. And it was really great to see, this other side of Jane. Because, in the earlier episodes, he's really gruff and brutish. And you don't really think of him as, a nice guy or anything, but he kind of has some redeeming moments in this episode, and it's just overall so strong. And I think maybe why I like this one so much, as compared to other ones, is because I watched the show first. I watched it when it was on TV, out of order, and then I watched it again on DVD, and then I watched Serenity, and then I watched the show again and again and again. And I think having that experience, watching it in order or watching it on TV and everything, you kind of connect more with Jane and all the characters, I guess, as compared to watching Serenity first. Because Serenity is much more River story and like more Simon, but on the TV show, there was, you know, a more balance, obviously, because there's more time. So I think that might have influenced it, but that Jamestown was just so fun. It's just such a fun episode, which is why, you know, it's my number one, closely followed by Out of Gas, which is like the other side of the coin, very serious episode.
Yeah, Jamestown is up there for me as well, pretty much for all the reasons that you had mentioned, but especially the fact that we finally get to see some depth when it came to Jane's character. And that was a crucial episode in a lot of ways because, you know, we all knew that he was there mostly for comic relief, but really understanding his motivations made that character so much more well-rounded that in later episodes is when we get to see him pack more of an emotional punch. Like The Message, I think, was another standout episode for him, even though he played a smaller role in it. His main thing was to wear the hat, but that last scene where he's at the funeral and he takes it off and it's so such a somber situation, like, you can buy him doing that, and you might not have if you hadn't seen something like a Jamestown that humanized him. Not only was he one of the greatest characters on that show, but his breakout moment in Jamestown really did make the show click, and it made it really just work on all levels. So definitely worth the praise.
Awesome. Yeah, no, all of the episodes were so great, and it's just sad. I'm still sad that it's only 13 episodes, you know?
yeah, it's still a sad thing. I still kind of try to keep it somewhat upbeat by saying, you know, we have 13 almost perfect episodes, and it never had the chance to ruin itself. So I try to keep that in the back of my mind when I think about Firefly. But
true. I mean, I'm sad it only lasts 13 episodes, but that does not mean I want it to come back as another TV show. Because, you know, like you said, I don't want them to ruin it. I don't want them to, like, tarnish its, you know, like, what it has become. You know, what it has become in the 10 years since it aired is amazing. You know, the community behind it, the fandom, everything, like, so I don't, just because I miss it and I'm sad that there are only 13 does not mean I want another show.
Yeah, it definitely needs to just, you know, keep its goodwill going and keep it as is, and we'll always love it, we'll always think of it fondly, and hopefully it stays that way. But before we move on from all things Firefly, I did watch the special, because I'm a true brown coat, unlike some people.
I'm terrible. I'm the worst fan ever.
No. I'm just messing with you. But the reason why I wanted to bring it up, not necessarily what was the content of it, because a lot of it was a retrospective, but it also touched a little bit on what was going on at Comic-Con. And since you actually went to Comic-Con, I just wanted to kind of get some intel on how that went down in terms of the buzz around the 10th anniversary panel, press conference, things like that, since you might not be the best fan, but you were there, and you got to live that Comic-Con experience, and I'm extremely jealous of that. So if you don't mind sharing a little bit how that was.
Oh, yeah, no, it was great. I unfortunately didn't get into the actual, like, panel in Hall H. I think it was in Hall H, maybe it was in Ballroom 20. But I didn't get in because the line obviously was ridiculous. The lines at Comic-Con are always crazy, but the line for the Firefly reunion, pretty much if you weren't in line by like 8 a.m. for this, I think the panel was at like 1 or 2. So, you know, so many hours in advance, you were not getting in. And so I went as press this past year. So, you know, in the morning I had interviews or other things to do, so I couldn't be in line all day. So I really had thought that I was not going to be a part of it at all. I was just going to have to hear about it, you know, after the fact and see any video or anything. But luckily, like last minute, I get an email saying that I'm confirmed for the press conference. So not the panel, but like a smaller room where basically after the panel is done, everybody who was on the panel goes into the small room just for like press to be a part of. So that pretty much made my life, getting that email. And it was amazing, like, just to be in the room while the cast was there, you know, reunited for like the first time in like the 10 years. And like to see them still have that like camaraderie and like, you know, ease about each other. Like you could tell they were still, they all loved being a part of the show. They all loved working together. So that was great. And, yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure they talked about all of the same stuff in the special, cause I'm sure they used like some of the footage. But no, it was really great to be a part of that, like seeing them all together and like them reliving some of their stories and talking about, you know, what they had hoped it would be as compared to like how it is now. And, you know, like they, I think, appreciate the fandom like so much. I don't like, I know like, Joss Whedon and everything always appreciates fandom. He loves like the whole community. He has a great community. So, but like to see them and to see them like interact with fans as well and like answering questions was great. Yeah, I can't really go into specifics because this was like months ago. So I can't really remember like everything, like exactly what they talked about, but I just remember them talking about like the show and like how much fun they had on it. And they shared like some anecdotes and Alan Tudyk was hilarious and yeah.
So jealous.
No, it pretty much like made my life to get that email. Cause I had, you know, figured I was not going to see any of it at all. And so to get in there was great. And like, I live tweeted it a little cause that was pretty much all I could do on such short notice. And I was like, my battery's dying, but people must know. So I live tweeted it and yeah, no, it was awesome to be there for that as a fan. I was just like freaking out. So
sweet.
Hopefully I'm there for like the 20th reunion or whatever at Comic-Con because I plan on going to Comic-Con forever. So
nice.
But yeah, I guess that wraps up all the Firefly talk. I swear I'm going to watch it when it reruns because I'm so upset at myself that I missed it. But yeah, it is rerunning on the Science Channel. So listeners, if you missed it yourself, you can check your local listings for that. It's going to be on a couple times at least this week, I think.
Yeah, I actually think I read a press release saying that it did really great numbers for Science Channel, so you're definitely going to have a chance again to check it out because they're probably going to re-air the crap out of it because it did it did such good numbers for it.
Awesome. Good to hear. So, what are you looking forward to this week in television?
This week, I'm looking forward to the next episode of Homeland. And I talk about the show a lot, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. And like I mentioned before, this second season has been somewhat divisive for viewers just because of some of the situations that the characters have been put in. A lot of people don't quite buy it as much as they did last season. I'm not one of those people. I think that it's been a pretty solid show from start to finish. I'll admit, sometimes it's contrived and there's some implausibilities, but I'm still really getting a kick out of it every time I watch it. And the reason why I want to see this next episode, not necessarily to see what happens, I just want it to essentially shut up all the naysayers. Like, everyone who's been nitpicking this show and pointing out these plot holes and things like that, I just want an episode to come along that shuts them up. And I'm hoping that it's going to be this one, so maybe that's just a little bit bitterness talking, but it all comes back to the fact that I'm a big fan of Homeland. I'm enjoying this season, and I just want everyone else to enjoy it too and stop complaining. So that's why I'm excited for Homeland.
Did you watch SNL's Homeland sketch?
I know it's out there, and I want to, but part of me is hesitant to because I don't want it to ruin anything for me. Like, I think that's one thing, like, I'm a big reader of Alan Sepinwall's, and in his write-up for this last episode, he had mentioned that he'd actually seen the episode on a screener before SNL, so it never really clicked while he was watching it, but apparently some of the stuff that's done by Anne Hathaway and Damian Lewis shines such a bright spotlight on some of the things that goes on in that show that it might be hard to actually divorce the SNL skit from the actual show. And I don't want that to happen to me, even though it doesn't do that for a lot of stuff. Like, I can watch SNL skits where they make fun of tons of stuff and that doesn't necessarily bother me. But I guess since I'm being kind of rubbed raw by some of the backlash this season, I just don't want another reason for people to point and make fun of Homeland. So that's why I'm a little bit gun-shy to check it out. I've heard it's funny, though, so I might after the season's over.
I mean, I watched SNL, but I don't watch Homeland, and so there was, like, this big disconnect, because I was like, I don't even know what I'm watching, because it's, like, a bunch of in-jokes and, like, yeah. things. So, I mean, Anne Hathaway's, like, Claire Danes crying impression was funny on its own, but I didn't quite get all of the references, because I don't watch the show.
Just so, another reason for you to watch Homeland.
I know, there are so many reasons I should watch Homeland. Don't worry. And I swear one day I will watch it.
if for no other reason, it's to get why Anne Hathaway cries that way.
Okay, fine. That's all. It's moving slowly up my list, I swear. Once I catch up on like the TV I'm currently watching, that'll get added to the rotation. Oh. I'm still behind on like Nashville, and I liked that show. So.
All right, I guess I can cut you some slack there.
Too much TV. But so what I'm looking forward to this week is The Vampire Diaries. Kind of as usual, I guess, because I love that show. And I think it just burns through, like, plot points so quickly that it's like, how can you not look forward to the next show to see what's happening? Because I feel like every episode is something important. And this past week was, like, no exception. Without getting too spoilery, the people who are listening who haven't watched it or don't watch it or whatever, the dynamic between Jeremy and Elena, I think, is about to get really interesting. So leave it at that. I'm excited to see how it plays out. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, me too. The ending of the last episode essentially saved it for me, because up until that point, I was really frustrated with that episode. And I guess a quick question for you, and if we don't want to get into too much spoilerific details, that's fine, but how have you been feeling about this season of The Vampire Diaries?
I mean, I guess your enjoyment hinges on how much you like Elena in her new role, which I really like. I've been liking the season also because, I think we talked before about last season and how we were both kind of tired of the originals.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole arc of being like, it was interesting, but it wasn't quite as strong as like previous season's arcs. So I am excited to see how it's going to play out with, Jeremy and everything. And that whole potential storyline. And I have been liking Elena, and her new dynamics with Damon and Stefan. I think that added a whole new layer to the show.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head when you said a lot of it depends on how you feel about Elena's new situation. And I think one of the reasons why I'm not liking this season as much as I wanted to is because she's quite not where I would like her to be, knowing what we know. And I think that was my biggest issue with the last episode, is because it felt like the character hasn't developed at all, and it was a little bit irksome to see her having the same type of issues that she's been having this entire time. And I get that it's a very transformational time, and that's something we can't necessarily rush through, but just some of the actions and some of the things she said during this last episode reminded me very much of like season 2 Elena, and I was never a big fan of her then, and I was just hoping that things would be a little bit different now, and it's not quite where it needs to be for me, at least. That said, like always, everything around her has been pretty entertaining, so I still like the show, and I'm still a big fan of it, and I'm still enjoying the season. I was expecting and wanting more from Elena, but we'll have to wait and see if hopefully that character is being taken in the right direction.
I mean, I think she is. I mean, she's been obviously changing a lot this season, and like how she interacts with people is different. And, you know, I understand what you're saying about how it's kind of like season 2 with the same like problems and stuff. But I don't know. I think it's different enough and that she's moving in a different direction that it's interesting.
Okay, cool. Fair enough.
But yeah, that pretty much wraps up the show. Thanks everybody for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter @Crystal_Bailey, as well as @ScreenInvasion. And feel free to chime in on your favorite Firefly episode as well. We want to hear your feedback on Firefly.
Definitely. And you can follow me on Twitter @Papa's2Cents. And don't forget that you can now stream the Small Screen Podcast on Stitcher.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.